CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Thursday, the last day of October, Halloween. Anyone going to a Halloween thing? You doing anything, Gugu?
No.
See, are you doing anything for Halloween?
If I just want to scare myself, I'll look at my 3-month bank statement.
No.
That's a shock, you know. What? I spent how much?
Yeah, shit, I know.
And then I'll just close it and go to bed.
So there's a story that we haven't really spoken about, but Sia can smell like Gugu's cologne, and it's irritating the hell out of him because it reminds him of an ex of his. I didn't know any of this.
I literally have to apologize every single time.
Like, I'm not even being dramatic. Gareth, you have one very similar as well.
Do I?
I'm telling you.
Okay.
Because I know.
Okay. You know these things, all right? You have a very refined sense of smell.
No, because I have to go to the bathroom and cry every time.
Did you just go and cry now? Because I saw you disappear.
Yeah, you literally walked out.
Yeah, walked out and then he came back in.
It's just one of those weird things. You know how certain smells, sights, textures will remind you of things?
Sure.
I have no idea why.
This is my favorite cologne, though.
It's this very specific cologne, and we weren't even that serious. We were together for, like, just fun dating for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But it's that emotional value that it has.
Did you care? Did you care about this guy? I mean, was it
afterwards. And this happened last year when I thought I was, like, this big bad bitch and I couldn't care about anything.
Wow.
And I thought, like, yeah, I don't care.
Bad
it's
bitch.
Fine.
Sure.
Afterwards, then I'm like, oh, actually, that was awesome. I didn't even talk about it on the show. But, yeah, Gugu, you have the exact one. Gareth, you have a similar one. And the brand has just done a relaunch now, like this massive marketing campaign. So they're, like, giving away products, they're
really?
Like doing discounts, so it seems like
everyone
of Johannesburg has.
Sorry, man.
So I'm minding my own business.
You don't need that first thing in the morning, do you?
No. At the grocery line, when I'm pumping up my petrol and I'll get a whiff of it, like, oh shit,
it's the worst, isn't it? It's like, damn it, that bastard.
No, he's an amazing guy.
All right. Okay, well, at least I understand why you walk out of the studio and go and cry a little bit and then you come back later. Now at least it makes sense to all of us.
I have it all together, don't I?
Speaking of former and current exes and exes in general, Gugu was on First Dates last night.
Ow.
Did you watch it?
I haven't recorded. I haven't watched it yet.
All right.
No, so I'm not in the game of spoilers. You can spoil away. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't watch it either.
Well, they're already.
I was just like,
yeah, no.
No, look, here's my thing about watching myself on TV. Like, dude, as many times as I do it, I cringe every time I watch myself. I just can't get used to watching myself on TV. So I'll probably watch it on catch up over the weekend on my own.
That's all right.
Weird.
Well, let's go straight to the messages because some people were on top of this right from the beginning. Zwei, who's the person who picked up on Gugu being on the promo the other day. There's like 1 second of him. Zwei deserves the credit. It wasn't someone, says Zwei, who saw that clip and sent it to you all. It was me, Zwei. Put some respect on my name.
Oh,
okay. Sorry, dude.
All right. Oh. So there we go. So we sorted that out. Thank you, Zwei.
All Zwei.
Very important. Okay. A lot of people very interested. One more thing. I am still watching. Why the hell was Gugu on that show? Even though Gugu is the weirdest guy in my life, all the couples except the two chicks are completely dysfunctional. So glad I'm not dating if that's the way it goes nowadays. Sure, some real shade.
Dysfunctional is a very strong word.
That's from Melody. Yeah, she's not happy about that. All right, a few other people with some ideas. Woohoo! Gugu is not tall, dark, and handsome. He is not her type.
Oh, really?
Hayini Betuna Ugugu, bloody cute Mur.
Oh.
Hook me up with him, please. She is taken, Baba. Look at all her smiles and laughing at those jokes. That's from Bitleng, who says they want
Yeah, there were a couple of jokes over there, I think.
Okay. All right.
Okay, from your experience being on the date.
Yeah,
how was it?
Dude.
It's weird when TV cameras are there. You're not going to have a real connection with someone.
Look, it was weird having other couples in the restaurant with us. I think for me, that was the weirdest part. You know, because as much as they try and create this normal
natural
restaurant
environment
setting, everyone else is not normal. Everyone is just awkward because it's like cameras, it's on TV. Mm. You know, like behave yourself. And then it just makes the whole environment just awkward.
Why do you always have to depict yourself as, who's the dude? My precious.
Oh, Gollum.
Who's Why this? Do you have to be the voice of Gollum all the time?
I don't know who that is.
Google it afterwards. Anyway, continue.
So tell us the story.
So yeah, I mean, besides that, I mean, she was a cool chick. I got so much feedback last night.
What was her name again?
Cindy.
Cindy, that's right. And she did look kind of interesting. She didn't look like the regular sort of girl, right?
No, she's Kenyan.
Yes, very nice.
She's Kenyan, so that was...
Is she Maasai? Because she's very tall.
That's the first thing I asked.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, she's not Maasai. She's some other tribe in Kenya. She's quite tall, actually. Quite dark.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say handsome.
Okay.
You,
tall, dark, and handsome.
You actually deserve to be single.
You never call a girl handsome.
Every moment
of your
singleness.
Call a girl handsome, that is the worst thing you could say. You could say you're ugly bitch, and it would be better than you're handsome.
Imagine.
It just rhymes, guys. It's not because she's handsome. It just rhymes, tall, dark, and handsome.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, I think the date went well because... Obviously, I've forgotten about it, but the feedback that I got last night...
How far back was this?
We filmed this in June, I think. June, July. Yeah. But the feedback was quite positive. Everyone's like, oh, I hope they stay together. Couple goals on Twitter. I'm just like... Oh,
well, you aren't spoiling anything because it's already aired.
Yeah,
What happened after the date itself? You have to go and you feedback on camera, both of you, and you say, would you be keen on a next date? What did she say?
So we sat in a room.
Uh-huh.
They asked us together, would you be keen on the next date? I looked at her. I said, Cindy, would you be keen? She said, yes. I said, okay, then we're having a next second date.
Okay. Well, that's good then.
But, it hasn't
That's very successful.
Yet.
So it hasn't.
Oh, it hasn't. Oh, no, it hasn't.
This one's not going to be on camera.
What's
this one's just going to be you two actually getting together.
July,
are
August,
you genuinely
September,
interested or were you just?
Gareth, no, man.
Okay. Have you found anyone else in the interim?
No.
Are you looking or are you just
I'm scouting. I'm moving along these streets, you know.
All right. Sure.
I can't give a lot away. It's just like
Don't
be cagey.
Yeah, I mean it's
Are you seeing someone or are you available at the moment?
I'm available at the moment.
Okay, very good.
That's the truth.
Or are you in
one of your
you
listeners? Yeah. Slid into my DMs. So I'm just trying to suss it out real quick.
Very good.
Just sussing the situation out.
No, take it. Take it from whence it comes. That's good.
Do you know my only problem in life as I fold my arms and I have a smug look on my face?
What?
Smug little thing.
I am pretty perfect except for being a big I told you so person. There are certain things when I say and people go, no. I love acknowledgement when it comes to when I say something and I know it's right and I need and I told you so. Gugu,
what did you say?
When you started here, I said, you know, take advantage of certain opportunities that'll come your way. You know, if someone wants to say, Gugu, I love you so much and I have a restaurant, come and have lunch for free here.
You
should take advantage of it because you never know how long it will last. And including some listeners may have great admiration and they might want to, you know, contact you. Hey, take advantage of it. And you, Pope the 17th, were like, no, I could never. No, I would never do that. Look at you now. Okay. Mm. Sure,
take it easy, and if it's easy, take it home.
That's nothing. I mean, Damon, when he was my producer, he met
Damon up, was your producer.
Yeah, he met up with a girl.
Jeez.
Who was a listener of ours. He went to her house, had sex with her.
Ooh.
And then she gave us like a blow by blow account of how it went. We had the whole thing. So
really?
Oh yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah, it sounds horrible.
Yeah, just don't go that far over the line. That's a little awkward.
People got to do what they got to do.
All right. Yeah. I'll watch it this afternoon and we'll feedback because we have one of the producers coming in tomorrow. So that'll be fun.
Oh, very good. Okay, so we can find out more about this show.
So we've got to both watch it this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Okay.
Mondays until Christmas.
Is that what it is?
Really?
Shit.
It was one of the random things my sister and I were discussing on the phone yesterday. 8 Mondays until Christmas.
Well, my sister says to me yesterday, she's all proud of herself. She said, everybody's birthday present, everybody's Christmas present arrived at my office yesterday. Evidently, she ordered everything online and they just delivered in one big box. So now she's got everyone's presents sorted for Christmas. She doesn't have to think about it anymore.
Well, and also she's really prepared.
Well, you see, this is it. Like, half of me is a bit jealous of her that she's so organized. But the other half is like, well, what do you got to look forward to for Christmas? Because it's not going to be so much fun for her. I mean, what, you know, part of the Christmas feel is going through the shops, even if it's crazy busy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just having a look. So she's like, no, I don't want to go into the shopping malls. They're scary and it's too many people. And so she's organized herself.
But she's right, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy in Christmas.
No. Yeah, and then people are planning December holidays if they can afford them. Ooh. Because that's a big issue. Tito gave his budget speech yesterday, which we'll speak to Anthea about just now. She's going to pop in. And we've got, among other things, in the Burning Platform later on, Canthan will be joining us, obviously, on Skype because he's all over the place this morning. But Davi Skultz, who is a consultant in the Joburg office of the Boston Consulting Group, he is, of course, well known as an economist and someone who can give us some very interesting feedback on Tito's budget, Tito's medium-term budget, which was given yesterday. So I'm looking
forward to
that.
As someone who really crunches the numbers.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. All right. Well, I'm going to do a talk on podcasting this morning. We do a few of these every now and then.
Mm.
And do you ever, when you've got an event like that on, do you think more carefully about what you wear? Because yesterday we filmed some episodes of Blind History and I realized I was wearing a t-shirt with kind of a logo on it, so it would have been obvious that we'd filmed two episodes in a row.
Yeah.
And I should have really worn something plain.
Or brought two t-shirts,
correct. You see, I after all those years of TV, I'm still not conditioned.
Yeah, clearly.
I still don't think about it. And for today's presentation, I thought I might as well wear a, you know, collared shirt with long sleeves because think about
looks
it a little
cool.
More.
I like it.
Yeah, thank you, but I don't want to overdo it because then it looks like you're trying too hard. I'm not going to put on a suit or any of that stuff. And I've got the sneakers on, so I'm certainly not dressing it up too much. But do you ever think when you have an important meeting or whatever that you have to dress especially well? And what's that go-to kind of outfit for you? When you have some important job interview or you've got a meeting with someone who can really change your future and that kind of thing. Do you think about it excessively? Because I honestly don't.
Really?
Yeah, I don't even if I knew I was going to be on TV, like I really had to focus very carefully. I used to send pictures of the different shirts and then like my manager would consult with me about what to wear and because I didn't think about it. And unless we had those conversations, I would just go with whatever was in the cupboard.
Yeah.
Which is not the best way to go, right?
No.
And I kind of, I don't ever look like a slob, but I'm not massively into fashion in terms of having to impress or, you know, wearing things with a purpose or any of that stuff. So I kind of move between the two. Sometimes you'll find that I really know what to do. Like if it's a smart event, I'll know what to wear and I don't even have to think about it.
Mm.
But on the other extreme, I couldn't care less.
Sure.
And I bounce between the two the whole time and it drives everyone crazy because, you know, people will talk about your brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone these days has a brand and you have to dress according to your brand. And actually, I mean, the reality is no one cares. I mean, people won't even, unless you dress like Skolopat or, you know, anything like that, they're not going to notice really.
I think
especially if you blend in.
Most people do care. I'll oppose you on that. Mm-hmm. But also most people only care up until they have something else that they can use to judge you. Because let's be honest, as soon as you walk in,
that's a good point.
I'm already sussing you out.
Yeah.
How you look, what you're wearing, what you're carrying. Are you sweaty? Aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
But that might all change as soon as you start speaking and there's something of substance and value. And I go, actually, there we go. I'll change
Your first impression can be changed.
Yes.
See, some people's can't. And this is not even their fault. They're not consciously aware of it. But a first impression, they say it lasts. It really does. It can account for up to 70% of what you think of someone.
Sure.
And sometimes it stays.
That's hectic. So
I know I've got to think about these things, but I mean, for God's sake, I've been in TV and radio for how long now? I'm not going to change. I'm never going to be the guy who cares that much about what I'm wearing. It's not going to change now. You could hire the greatest fashion consultant in the world. You could get me any. You know, I would never have to pay for an outfit. Blah blah blah. I still wouldn't dress properly. Like Somizi, it matters to him, right? Sure. I remember with Somizi and Unati on Idols, those two would spend. They'd get there an hour before I would get in.
Yeah.
And they would titivate and they'd change outfits.
Titivate.
I'd try different stuff.
Yes.
I couldn't care less. I was like, I'm taking this and this. And I didn't change there. I usually just arrived in it.
Yeah, but I think for like interviews, you gotta step it up.
Do you?
When I came for my interview, I dressed up. You know, I put a blazer on. Like, I barely ever dressed like that.
No.
Now I wear caps and t-shirts and torn jeans and stuff.
No, no.
Yeah. Thanks.
Really let yourself
shows
go.
How much you...
Right?
Exactly.
Oh,
that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No. I feel we need to concede the majority of the time to Sia to explain what he thinks of this, because I think he's the most kind of thoughtful when it comes to what to look like and what to wear.
And I'm no oracle or expert around this, but for me, it also matters because in an instant like what you're depicting, Gareth, and you know, there are a lot of things going on in your head.
Sure.
You already have a lot of things to cover here at the office, and then you're leaving, and then you have to think about what you're going to say, and then you're factoring in the audience. Am I,
I'm not that focused on the outfit.
The outfit should just be one of the things that shouldn't be concerning to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want it to be another worry on your list to go, actually, I'm standing in front of people. Do I look good? Oh, wait, now the shirt is untucked. Am I uncomfortable? You don't want it to be another worry. So that's why looking good is important.
I think that's a good point to make.
And then you can go on and use the cologne that reminds Sia of an ex.
Well,
it's such a good cologne. Gareth, how often do you wear
it? It's part of your brand, right? Yeah. It's part of what you got.
It's a damn
brand.
Good cologne.
All right, let's go to some messages. I'm going to take a listen to some of these. Let's see what we've got here. All right, here we go.
Hey, Cliff Central. Just watched Gugu's date with the lovely Cindy. Mm-hmm. Suspect that she may have called in a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
Gugu, you look like Trevor Noah's dumber, younger... cuter brother. Cindy's a catch. She's the exotic lady you were looking for. Loved the show, loved all the dynamics, loved the two nerds in the beginning with the squinty eyes. One had squinty eyes and
That's pretty horrible.
Loved the way it ended with the girl that looks, she kind of reminds me of the chick from Orange is the New Black, per se, and her gorgeous Amazonian, Ghanaian, Zambian future lover.
Wow.
It's amazing. This show was awesome.
You like that, huh?
Gugu, if you do not...
Oh, no.
Contact Cindy again. You're a dumbass.
Yeah, there we go. Right.
But, you know, with your pretty looks and stuff, you'll probably get away with it. But anyway.
Candace thinks you're Trevor Noah's younger, dumber, cuter brother. Well, that's not a bad thing. Yeah, take the compliment.
Yeah, it's a concoction of
All right, very traits. Nice. I know... Now, what Gugu looks like. Such a good-looking man. This is interesting. This is a compliment coming through from Ruth. Thank you, Ruth. Best suited to a smaller, petite, pretty, quiet, and intelligent type.
That is my type.
Oh,
Ruth.
Okay.
Exactly my type.
All right, what are you bringing to the party?
This, you know what, Gareth? I love these questions that you've asked. You've asked it of Leanne this week as well. And I think a lot of people aren't mindful of things like this. Everyone is very quick to say,
what do I
want someone X and Y and Z. And it's like, well, what are you bringing?
Listen, people have this laundry list.
Are you clapping the gym? Are you looking after
I'm in the gym. Have you seen this chest lately?
It wasn't a personal thing. I was just making a general example.
He's talking generally. It's not about you.
I train so hard and he's going to ask me if I go to the gym.
Clearly it's personal. I'm sorry I touched that.
All right.
That is so interesting. What are other people bringing to the table? Bring?
Yeah, exactly. Because people just think about what they want, and they don't think about what they do, mm-hmm. what they've got.
Okay.
And you got to do it on four levels, right? It's got to be the level of physical. So that's what you look like.
Mm-hmm.
And you look after yourself. Are you healthy?
Pump
are
iron.
Are you energetic? Yeah, those are physical things. I mean, you don't have to be like a Greek god. You just have to look after yourself. No, you're not going to be like Arnold, and neither am I, and neither is Sia. We could try all our lives. Mm-hmm. There's some people who just are born with a predisposition to just being in perfect physical shape from the get-go. And I mean, there's one friend of mine, he doesn't go to gym at all, and he looks fitter than all the rest of us.
Yeah.
He does nothing. He does not lift a... I don't think he's ever been to gym in his life.
He just lives.
Yeah. And he's just fitter genetics. Looking than everybody. Anyway, so that's the physical. Then you get the mental. Now, this is, you know, an intellectual attraction. You have to be able to make some contribution to the conversation. You have to know something about something, even if your area of expertise is very limited. Let's say, for example, you're interested in animals. Then you will... You'll talk about animals and you'll hope that maybe it sparks something with them. I know this sounds very analytical, but this is what really happens at a base level with people when they meet. So you've got to have physical, you've got to have mental, right? Then you've got to have an emotional connection. So in other words, you've both got to be in a place at a time where you want something. Or you've both got to be in a place or a time where you're ready to try something. And then you have to be emotionally accessible, which means you can't be closed off. You can't be cold. They can't be cold. It's not going to work that way. And then you get the spiritual connection. Now, this part's a little bit... Yeah, this is very complicated because some people are not spiritual at all. But we all have a little bit of it in us. And that's if you are willing to just go with it, let the universe take you in a direction, connect, something special happens, some magical spark, some bit of divinity creeps in. Who knows?
It
is. I'm telling you, there's a little bit of something special, and that takes a relationship up a level. Now, if you can get 3 out of 4, you're good to go. If you got 2 out of 4, it's not. It's very, very tenuous. 1 out of 4, it's not going to work. So, in other words, if you're just physically attracted to someone, it's not going to work. And if you manage to get 4 out of 4, ging, ging, then you hit the jackpot.
Then you wife her.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
But just even being mindful of the four and aiming to get, you know, 2, 3, 4 out of four is the correct first step. Some people are not mindful of it. Like
people just stumble in like this. Like a drunk person walking around a room and bumping into shit. That's really how most people live their lives.
Yes.
I mean, we sit here and we break it down. But honestly, most people, they wake up in the morning. If you're not one of these people, good for you. But if you are, there's still time for you to change and improve. If you wake up in the morning, you just stumble around. Life is just full of haphazard circumstance and you have nothing to do with it. You don't feel like you're the one in charge of your life. Well, nothing we can do for you, right?
Yeah, Sia strikes me as the stumble into stuff kind of.
No, I'm very mindful of it, and that's why I'm not in a relationship, because I don't want to factor in anyone else into my life. I don't want to now go, oh, well, what do they want to do? And, oh, okay, well.
You're learning from Gareth.
No, it's.
Yeah, but you see.
How do I stroke their ego?
I hear Sia completely. No. Uh-huh. This is why the majority of people don't understand why I would want to be single. Because they don't want to be. They're terrified of being alone. Then they think, oh, well, there must be something wrong with Gareth and Sia because they don't want to settle down. And I'm like, you know what? You wish you were as happy as me.
I get it. It's such a beautiful thing. It's almost noble in society to hear people say, oh, we've just grown together. And, you know, we share experiences. Ain't nobody got time for that for me. I'm like, no.
Well, here's a comment for you. Gugu probably has his shit together with a medical aid and a retirement package. There is nothing better than a man with responsibility.
Oh. See, very practical.
I don't think
Romeo to sweep you off your feet? I don't know.
All right, let's get into the 5 things you need to know today. All right. This is interesting. HBO have ordered 10 episodes of a Game of Thrones spin-off called The House of the Dragon. Shortly after reports emerged, the premium cable channel had nixed another series in the George R.R. Martin world. So House of the Dragon will take place 300 years before Game of Thrones, a medieval fantasy series that became a huge phenomenon before it ended its 8th season run in May. Do you remember when we were obsessed with this? As soon as the show's over, we just move on like that.
But Gareth, I feel bad for people like you. If you are now in a lifetime contract with Star Wars, there'll always be a new Star Wars coming out every single...
That's true, because now Disney owns it, so they're going to just keep churning them out.
And here it seems like now Game of Thrones is also doing the same thing.
I'm not as contracted to Game of Thrones, I've got to tell you. Like, Star Wars grabbed me when I was still a little kid, and when it gets into your head while it's still soft, it sticks. It's like religion, you know? And Star Wars,
well, it's still soft.
Yeah, if you get into someone's head while they're still, you know, kind of understanding the world, and this is why certain kinds of education are so dangerous, and certain kinds of preconceived ideas that you put into children, and bigoted ideas and prejudices and things that parents do without even realizing it. You put that into a kid's head when it's tiny, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. That's the way they're going to stay forever. They're going to think that about everything from then on. It takes a lot to get it out. And Star Wars came into my head at that stage, and it was like the most beautiful story in the world, good and evil, love and hate, you know, this constant balance, all these things that are going on in life. And I thought it was a pretty good fantasy to be attached to at that age. Game of Thrones came a lot later, and I don't think I'm as hooked in. But the new series will be based on Martin's book, Fire and Blood, and will tell the story of House Targaryen. The network announced House of the Dragon at an event intended to stir enthusiasm for HBO Max, a streaming service that will launch in May 2020, at $15 per month to compete with Netflix and Walt Disney. Ooh, pay-per-view.
I wonder if they'll have the same numbers that that Game of Thrones had on its own.
Probably not, because remember, Game of Thrones also started with very few viewers, and it grew steadily. They didn't realize they had a hit like most TV networks do until it was really obvious. And then there's a dude. What is up with Stellenbosch? Stellenbosch University is investigating claims that a man had to be hauled out of the library on campus when he was allegedly caught masturbating. A video has been circulating on social media in which a man can be seen in the middle of the populated library, hunched over and purportedly committing an indecent act. I love how the newspapers have to couch this stuff.
Call it what it is.
Oh, man. A second video clip showed the man being led out of the library in handcuffs, escorted by campus security. The man had reportedly signed in as a visitor and is not registered as a student.
Then
why is he masturbating in the library?
But what is going on with Stellenbosch?
Yucky.
What is going on with Stellenbosch? Didn't they also have the gym where the guy was masturbating?
Yeah.
Stellenbosch is a filthy place by the sound
of things. Horny mother truckers.
Yeah, clearly.
Jeez.
Look, I saw a comment, and you know, there are a lot of these cliches that are thrown around in times like this, but this comment in this instance actually made me see things in a different way. It was a young girl who said, and this is why we don't want to hear anyone in an instant like this bring up, well, what were they wearing or what were they doing?
Obviously.
Because if it is someone minding their own business, studying at university, this dude was not seeing short skirts all over the place. This dude wasn't seeing, you know, beads of sweat trickle.
But all right, at the same time, this is what the university says. While we are working urgently to confirm all the facts, I want to reassure our students that the safety is our priority. Now, as creepy as this guy is, he's not a safe... You don't have to worry about him from a safety point of view. He sounds like the kind of guy who, if you went boo, he would run.
Well, he looks like it. I'm seeing the video now.
He's like a bald guy.
Yeah, he's a bald, like 50-something-year-old dude.
Oh, it's very creepy. But I don't think he's a danger to anyone. I think he's just a creep.
Well, they're covering their tracks.
Yeah, but they always talk like it means, you know, someone could have been murdered or raped. And don't ever connect the two unless they are obviously connected.
Well, you know, if they didn't say anything, next thing everyone would be saying, well, oh my goodness, so the university doesn't care by not...
Yeah, exactly. All right, and then judgment is expected to be handed down in the case between Pravin Gordhan and Julius Malema on Thursday. The ruling will be delivered in the Equality Court. Last year, Gordhan lodged a case against Malema over remarks he made outside the state capture inquiry venue. Malema accused Gordhan of being a state-owned enterprise's porn that was there to remove black people and being a lot of being the dog of white monopoly capital. Oh. Last month, a judge dismissed Gordon's bid to strike sensitive reports from the court record. Gordon, should he win, wants Malema to donate 150,000 rand to charity, apologize, and pay costs. Well, I've said what I think of this. Remember? I'm on Julius's side because I'm a free speech advocate, and you should be able to insult people. You should be allowed to be insulting. And no one should be above that. And if we have the equality court saying this is wrong, then it's going to muzzle free speech.
Mm-hmm.
It would be bad for all of us. So I'm sorry, Praveen. And I mean, I'm not a fan of Praveen anyway, but there we go. In September, President Cyril Ramaphosa had this to say. He is expected to give an update on the government's efforts to end gender-based violence. Because, of course, government are in people's houses while terrible things are happening to women.
Hmm.
It makes no sense at all. Government cannot stop gender-based violence because government isn't in the room when gender-based violence is occurring. You don't have someone from the government sitting in your lounge when a man takes out his fury on his wife.
Hmm.
You don't have government in the room when some man gets home drunk from work and abuses some girl in his family. You don't have government in the room when all of these terrible things happen to women walking the streets and trying to get to work and traveling in taxis. This is a society problem, and government cannot make society better unless it gives society the tools and the freedom to be able to sort itself out. Plus, of course, people have to want to improve. And men in this country have a long way to go.
I think it goes back to that university comment that I made. Once again, if the leader of the country didn't say anything, then people would be looking at him and side-eyeing again as to why aren't you saying anything? That means you're advocating
But so Cyril says he will address the nation on Thursday afternoon. That's today, when he responds to questions posed by members of parliament. He announced the emergency 5-point action plan to deal with the scourge of gender-based violence. When he announced his emergency action plan, he promised on an interim committee, rather, in his office would focus on its swift implementation. I don't know what they're going to do.
This is a big day today. Praveen and Julius.
Yeah, it's a big day.
Ramaphosa having to speak about this.
All right. And then finally, while we're on the news headlines, Twitter is to ban all political advertising worldwide, saying that the reach of such messages should be earned, not bought. This is interesting. I don't know how they're going to do this. But while internet advertising is incredibly powerful and very effective for commercial advertisers, that power brings significant risk to politics, Jack Dorsey tweeted. Social media rival Facebook recently ruled out a ban on political ads. News of the ban divided America's political camps for the 2020 election. A member of Donald Trump's re-election campaign said the ban was yet another attempt by the left to silence Trump and conservatives. But Bill Russo, spokesperson for the campaign to elect Democratic frontrunner Joe Biden, said, "When faced with a choice between ad dollars and the integrity of our democracy, it is encouraging that for once the revenue did not win out." So clearly, if you are for free speech, you're now on the right, which is a bizarre position because it used to be the other way around. And clearly, if you're on the left, you're for regulation. Isn't that interesting? You want people's advertising. I mean, you know, how about this is the problem I have with people on the left. So they assume that people are really, really useless and dumb and shouldn't have their own agency to be able to decide after they're exposed to an ad whether or not they're going to partake. This is what the left think of you. They think you're dumb. So they want to get anything that might advertise a position against theirs away from you. They want to stop you from even seeing it because you're so dumb. You'll just follow the advertising like a blind mouse. And the right is saying, in this case, with Trump and company, oh, well, this is clamping down on free speech. I got to say, their case seems to be a lot more. Don't you want more information rather than less? Do you want bans? Do you want people telling you you can't see this? Or would you like to be able to see the stuff and then decide for yourself? It's the same as, would you like the state to control the economy? Praveen Gordon. Or would you like people to manage themselves? I wonder. What do you think, Anthea? What's your position on all of this? I mean, come on, don't be shy.
Well, I think the left have been proven right. People are dumb.
Okay, so you're better than them, and governments are better than them, and they must decide for them. Let's be very careful we don't go down that track, Stalin.
I get exactly where
That Stalin thing escalated very quickly.
Yeah. You'll decide what's very quickly. Because people are dumb, you're going to decide what's good for them.
So that's the problem, right? That's where we're going with this. Should I be telling somebody what to do? I'd like to think when it comes to finance, yes, I do know better. And so somebody needs to take advice and take the right advice. And I see a lot of it in my industry. And I'm only using my industry as an example because...
Covering your tracks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Thanks, yeah. Because it's what I know, right? And so there are a lot of bad financial planners and advisors in the country who shouldn't be given a voice and who actually should be stopped from saying things.
But whose responsibility is it to not trust those people with their money? Whose responsibility is it? Like, do you want central planning where everybody's money is managed by someone competent like you? No. Or would you like people to decide for themselves and the good ones score and make money and look for future financial planning and stability and sustainability? Or would you like people, and some, by the way, will fall by the wayside and some will end up having made major losses, but that's happened in every corner of the economy for years.
Okay, I'm going to give you that. You know, survival of the smartest, basically.
Not even the smartest. Sometimes it's just luck. You know this. Like, who knew that Steinhoff was going to crash as badly as it did? Except the Steinhoff people, who were clearly evil and had premeditated this whole plan. They, of course, thought they could get away with it.
Sure.
Unscrupulous people. But you know what? Someone suffers, and at the end it might not be your fault, but your decision to trust those people with it, if they're untrustworthy people, must have eventually some kind of complicity from your side.
Sure, and I was quite happy to take responsibility for the fact that I didn't know.
Yeah.
But I do get that people need to be protected. Well, maybe they don't need to be protected from themselves, actually. Let them be.
Right, and if a stupid ad comes up saying, I'm Donald Trump, and if you don't vote for me, you're going to end up in hell, and you fall for it, and that's the reason you vote for Donald Trump, then what the hell? Who needs to step in and save you from yourself?
Sure.
Who?
You get what you deserve.
Right. And I think that's true for what's going on in the budget as well, because just as an overview, I saw some comments about what people thought of poor old Tito trying his best, right? And Tito wants Eskom to fire a bunch of people. Tito wants Eskom to rationalize its operations. And Praveen says, no, we can't fire anybody.
How bizarre was that?
Yeah. So the two of them are at loggerheads. So guess which one is thinking, let's try to make this easier for people to let it work. And guess which one is thinking, we have to keep things as they are.
Indeed.
Hmm?
Yeah, and for the first time, I actually found myself yesterday agreeing with a union leader. I couldn't believe that.
How that happened.
It was, I forget his name now, Matthew Parks from COSATU. He was saying, can we not be firing the teachers and the nurses, please? Can we get rid of the bloated expenditure, the high salary earners in government? Because we know it hasn't gone away. Government wage bill is still a huge issue. So I was like, yeah, for once a union member or union leader is actually making some sense.
Well, let's start at the top with, I see you brought the whole speech in here. Anthea's going,
can you hear, listen, how's this for a thud factor? It didn't work, right?
But yeah, it's a lot of papers.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got?
So where to start? Let's see. I think everyone's calling the speech flowery and poetic and no real tangible changes. But actually, this is the mini budget. So what the mini budget is supposed to be is just a thermometer. So we have our real budget in February. In October, we look at it and go, how far along are we? What's happening? Okay, guys, this is what's happening. And maybe be careful if you don't fix things. Then things like a tax increase, cuts in wages, all sorts of stuff, right?
Here's Tito being flowery, just so people who missed it can hear. Right. Listen to this. This is Tito being...
Mr. President, so that I don't disappoint, let me say, as the good book says, Second Corinthians chapter 9, verse 2, I think.
Thank you.
If you want to reap sparingly,
oh Lord,
you must sow sparingly. If you want to reap bountifully, you must also sow bountifully. Unquote. Amen.
All right, there's some flowery stuff.
If you, literally.
If you want to reap bountifully, you must sow bountifully.
Look, the minister's now, he's becoming known for his quotes like this. What did you quote the last time? It was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
It's Charles Dickens.
I mean, come on. Just right, get so, right to the business of things.
So this is a thermometer, you said, and this is kind of a way for us to check our progress. How are we doing and what has changed and what does Tito indicate are the likely areas of future change?
So the South African economy is very sick.
Yes.
And the problem with where we are at the moment is that the trajectory, in my view, has not changed. We're on the same trajectory. Spending is increasing, revenue is decreasing, we don't have enough money, and things are looking bad. The National Treasury decreased their expectation for growth for this year to 0.5%, pretty much in line with IMF, South African Reserve Bank, World Bank. And then Tito started off really well going, we need economic zones, reminding everyone that he knows we need economic growth, mm-hmm. spoke about structural reforms, the IRP, blah, blah, blah. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, you and I were talking about, seven or eight different plans to get the economy going since 1994. None of them have been implemented. They just keep being rehashed under a different name. The big shock to me, there were two things. One, Eskom and debt relief in the same sentence. Like, what is going on here? Surely he's not thinking that government has to give Eskom debt relief. In other words, pay for Eskom's debt. That's a big shocker. I mean, so the idea is, and Moody's do their review on Friday, or they come back to us on Friday, and they said that they're actually expecting our debt to GDP number to be around 60%. And it's okay. It's not great. It's a big number, but they get it and they're fine with it.
That means every rand we earn as a country, more than half of that rand is going to paying debt.
Yes.
Sure. If you were running your household on that basis,
more than half.
You'd be
60%, yeah.
If you were running your household on that basis, you'd be a very irresponsible person.
Indeed.
Right.
Right. So 60% was the number. 60% was the number we all had in mind. Tito came out yesterday and said, by 2022-23 budget, debt to GDP will be 70%. And by 2028, so 70% Moody's are going to downgrade. There's just no question about it. You know, your absolute last chance has gone. He said that in 2028, on this trajectory, we're looking for debt to GDP to be at 81%, and there is no doubt that that is IMF bailout territory.
When are they going to bail us out?
You want them to, don't you?
Yeah, because I think this government's incompetent, and I think the IMF could run things better than the government. Absolutely.
Oh, so
I think the ANC
great
have proven themselves to be incapable of administering the state. That's all there is to it.
They're two great analogies or comparisons we can make. One is Brazil and the other one is Tunisia. So from a Tunisian point of view, we're exactly where they were before the Arab Spring. We had high youth unemployment. Uh-huh. We had an economy suffering. We had no growth. There were a whole lot of things happening. And one of the major things was that they had government corruption. Brazil, 1998, they got an IMF bailout. They turned things around. And political corruption, government corruption. So the changes in both these scenarios. In Tunisia, they had a big revolution. The president ran away in his jet plane.
You were there at the time.
I was. Yeah. Yeah, experienced the whole. Very interesting.
President
a story.
Ran away. What else?
And there was a state of emergency and kind of the Muslim Brotherhood came into power, so now things are very strict. You know, before, sure. Tunisia was quite
an open society.
Fairly, yeah. For
North Africa, yeah.
That's right, yeah. So in fact, in the Maghreb, Tunisia was known as the Las Vegas of the Maghreb. Because you could,
anymore.
Because between the five Maghreb countries, you could actually go to Tunisia and get alcohol and smoke.
Sure. Clutch your pearls. What?
And then the other one is Brazil, where they got an IMF bailout, never really turned around. And again, a very similar economy to ours, commodity driven,
resources, that kind of thing.
That's right. And the change really only happened in the last 2 years. And what happened there was not a revolution, but politicians in handcuffs. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. Anyway, so back to our budget. Budget deficit has gone from 4.5% to 6.2%. So you think it's only small, 2%. What's 2%? We're talking trillions here. We're talking of rands in trillions. So 2% is a lot. And by 2020, next year, we're expecting a budget deficit of 6.5%.
Now, that means that someone has to lend government the money that they need to be able to pay for the things that they're paying for. In other words, the government wage bill, parastatals, all of the services, the basic stuff that government's required to do.
Exactly. So
who's going to lend them this money?
Oh, that's interesting, because a couple of months ago, we went to the foreign market and raised euro bonds. Remember, we said in February, we said we were all the finance minister, not we. The finance minister said he was going to raise 2 billion rand in dollar-denominated euro bonds. We raised 5 billion, and everyone was very excited because, look, the foreigners are actually willing to lend us money, because if you borrowed money in Europe, for example, you'd get negative interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
If you loaned money, you'd get negative interest rates. Whereas here, you're actually getting a decent yield. Our 10-year government bond is trading at about 8.40 at the moment. So there we were. We borrowed $5 billion from foreigners in dollars. And then yesterday, from the time Tito started speaking to the end of the speech, the rand had blown out by 2.5%. So the servicing, the repaying of that debt in an hour and a half was suddenly 2.5% more expensive.
Jesus.
Right? So I think if Moody's downgrades us, which I don't think they will do on Friday, they won't go from stable outlook to downgrade. What they're going to do, no doubt, on Friday, in my mind, no doubt, on Friday, is they're going to put us on negative outlook, mm-hmm. and then in February they're going to downgrade us.
All right.
And if you get downgraded, your
cost... That means we no longer have investment grade status.
And pragmatically what that means is that we fall out of this WGBI, World Government Bond Index, saying that foreign investors can no longer be buying South African debt or owning South African debt. So they'll have to sell it, and then our bond yields spike. So now all of a sudden it becomes more expensive for South Africa to borrow.
What does that mean for ordinary South Africans? Do we need to put our money into stocks? Do we need to take our money out of the market? Do we need to buy gold? Do we need to buy other
bonds,
currencies?
Money markets.
What are we looking at?
I think where we are at the moment, let's just play it safe. So stay away, not stay away completely from shares. If you're in the short-term game, if you're playing this for the next 12 to 18 months, then I would say stay in the kind of money market, flexible income type bond portfolios. If you're in the long term, it's very difficult to time the market. Gee, South African shares are so cheap at the moment. I am itching to buy South African shares.
And as you said on Monday, there are some companies that are performing so well, despite all
exactly.
the economic indicators to the contrary, right?
The problem for me is I don't know what the catalyst is going to be for the rest of the shares to go higher. Mm. You know, so Clicks, when they put out their results, 10% up in one day, and then they release results, and the shares down 2%.
Mm-hmm.
It's so difficult to guess where you want to be in the share portfolio at the moment. But so rather play it safe, I would say. Don't be out of the market. Right. Just be invested in the safer stuff.
So you mentioned that, but you're also concerned about Eskom.
Okay, yeah. So Eskom and SAA, right?
Right.
I don't even know what to say about Eskom. It's just so ridiculous. I thought at least
the worst managed company in human history.
Yeah, and Tito gets it. He's like, this company needs to start acting like a real company instead of relying on government for debt. I mean, in March of this year, their debt was 441 billion rand.
What?
That's just crazy. And everyone keeps talking about if government brings that debt onto their balance sheet, which is crazy because actually it's probably on the balance sheet. It's considered to be on the balance sheet already. It would really blow kind of our fiscal position out of proportion. And then he very subtly mentioned SAA and how SAA needs equity partners. SAA has 9.2 billion rand in debt. If you were going to buy a company and think you could turn it around, would you take on the 9.2 billion rand in debt?
only if you were an idiot who should not be trusted with money anyway.
Right. So Tito wants to make sure that SAA keeps going and he wants equity partners in. What do you think he's going to do about that debt?
Relief. Pay it off.
Yeah. On behalf of SAA.
Sure.
And that paying off on behalf of SAA, by the way, is your tax money. Can I just remind you
about
that?
Of course. Where else is this government going to get money from except by squeezing it from the middle class in South Africa? That's what they do.
And one of the other disappointing things about Tito yesterday, and as I said earlier on, it's a mini budget, so he can't make policy changes, he can't increase tax, but he can warn you, be careful, there's a tax hike coming in February. He didn't really. He might have subtly, perhaps, and people are saying that he alluded to it. I listened to the speech and thought, no tax increases.
See, I listened to you, and you said on Monday, you doubt very much he can, like he's up against the wall on this.
I think he's got no more room to maneuver. Oh. Economic growth is really stumbling. The companies are leaving. The tax base is already dwindling. I mean, do you really want to then go and increase taxes and then come? Because what you're trying to do, of course, is get foreigners, foreign companies to be investing and building in South Africa. You then increase the tax base. The tax rate. Then your tax base shrinks again because foreign companies are going, no, actually it's more, I'll go to a tax beneficial country mm-hmm. rather than South Africa. So I don't think he can raise taxes very much more, but he certainly handed over the baton very nicely to Edward Kiesewetter. He said, you know, I can't raise taxes, but Edward, can you please start collecting some more? You know, and there's no doubt that our tax collection has fallen by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that on a number of occasions with a number of ministers, you know, going, my hands are tied. It's over to you. So the other things that everyone's kind of talking about is the government wage bill and the car allowance for officials and this early retirement package. I feel like that's just tinkering around the edges.
Mm. You know, makes no real difference.
Absolutely. So what if government officials are now not allowed to spend more than 800,000? And he said 800,000 rand in his speech, but actually the written speech, by the way, says 700,000 rand. So I wonder which one it really is. So what if they have to now limit their spending to 800,000 rand for a car? And taking early retirement, since they implemented this.
How much of an allowance do ordinary citizens of South Africa get for their car? Oh, that's right, zero. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's beautiful. You're a government minister, because you're so important, driving around making bad decisions that have only fucked the economy up. You can have some extra car allowance, or we'll reduce it slightly. Please, you're playing around the edges, as you said.
And here's another thing. If you're a government official, we're offering you early retirement. Since they've implemented it, all of 4,000 people have taken early retirement. I mean, geez, how's that for a waste of time?
All right. You want to throw anything else in there?
No, have I
bloody
shocked
bleak.
You? No.
Yeah, it's very bleak. It's scary. But we are going to be talking in the Burning Platform next to Canthan Pillay, and we'll also speak to Davi Skoltz, who's going to join us, talk a little bit about what they think of the medium-term budget and some of the other things that are going on in politics and in society. So stick around for the Burning Platform. Thank you, Anthea.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Good to see you. Anthea Gardner with a special medium-term budget edition of The Money Shot this morning. It is 7 o'clock. CliffCentral.com.